Welcome to the world's greatest podcast, Courtside with Greenberg and Dokic. I'm Seth Greenberg. Today on the podcast, we've got a ton to talk about. The Duke Wild win over North Carolina and then validating that win against Florida State. Seton Hall taking control of the Big East. Big East is good. Seton Hall might be that much better. Colorado looking like the best team in the Pac-12. It's prime college basketball season, and college basketball never disappoints. Each and every night doesn't get any better. Me and D Squared are all over it. But before we start, I want to remind you to subscribe, rate, and review the podcast wherever you're listening. It really helps us and helps other people find the show. Also, tell a friend about the world's greatest podcast and tweet at us using the hashtag Courtside. We bring it every week. We're real. We are fired up. What else could you ask for? The world's greatest podcast. Let's face it. We wouldn't be the world's greatest podcast unless we brought it every single day. Also, check out the Woj Pod. He's going to have a special live all-star edition to the podcast in Chicago this weekend featuring Patrick Beverly, Jackie McMullen, Ryan Russillo. Be sure to subscribe wherever you listen to your podcasts. That'll be an entertaining show. And finally, before we get started, let's talk to about our friends at Vivid Seats. We all love a night out, whether it's seeing our favorite band or being in a crowd to cheer on our favorite team. With Vivid Seats Rewards Loyalty Program, you can attend the contest or show of your choice and earn credit towards your next live event. Vivid Seats is the top source for tickets for all live events. You can sort by price, or you can look seats in the section you want, the row you want, your choice, all in the Vivid Seats app. To make things even better, Vivid Seats now has a loyalty program that allows fans to earn credit back. All you need to do is use the Vivid Seats app to purchase tickets and start earning today. Go to the App Store or Google Play and download the Vivid Seats app. Fans are automatically enrolled in the Vivid Seats Rewards loyalty program. And when you make your next purchase, enter the code ESPN25 for a 10% off your next order. Every purchase is backed by a 100% buyer guarantee. From the biggest concerts and games to the hottest theaters and shows and more, Vivid Seats has it all. Download the app and join the Vivid Seats royalty program today. And don't forget to use the promo code ESPN25 for 10% off your next order. Make a memory that lasts a lifetime and let the Vivid Seats app help you get your favorite seats to your favorite live events.
For the win! Yes! Yes! At the buzzer, they poured on its way!
Oh, oh, oh my goodness! Oh!
They have to get it in with no timeouts, they do.
Courtside with Greenberg and Dokic, the definitive college basketball podcast.
Oh, yeah, it's Courtside with Greenberg and Dokic, a.k.a. the world's greatest podcast. And before we get into it, I want to thank everybody that has downloaded us, everybody that has listened, to make this a very popular podcast. I don't want my phone to ring, so we'll turn that off. But Coach Whisperer, Seth Greenberg, along with me, Dan Dokic, and we're going to get right into it. Seth, North Carolina, Duke. Unbelievable that North Carolina jumps right back and gets it done. Like you said last night, kind of a tournament weekend for both teams, actually. All teams, kind of, those two teams.
Yeah, I'll tell you one thing. That game was ridiculous. And, you know, we talk about 50-50 in the last 100 games, exact same number of points. Carolina coming in with a losing record. By the way, shout out to the Carolina fans. They showed up at game day. We do appreciate that. It helps. It makes it more exciting. And the game, and when the game started, it was like vintage Carolina basketball when it started. Carolina busted it up in transition, playing ahead of the defense, attacking, playing through the post, getting to the offensive glass. They did everything they could do in the first half, excluding defend Vernon Carey. But the ending was, look, I mean, I don't know how, there are great rivalries. I don't know how many rivalries end in the way that these Duke Carolina games end, because there was no way in the world Carolina should have lost that game. Yeah, they missed free throws. Then they couldn't stop the basketball, so Duke came right down in 2 seconds, laid it in. Then they bang a shot off the free throw and lose a little focus, and Trey Jones makes that play. I mean, the number of crazed plays, if you tried to recreate that, The odds of that happening again were probably the same as the odds of these guys playing 100 times, being 50-50, and scoring the same amount of points. Would you agree?
Oh, God, yeah. Yeah. The odds of both are none.
Really? Yeah, I mean, it's insane.
Yeah.
And like Trey Jones, man, he was good. I don't think he's a closer, but he was good at the end of that game.
Seth, I've said before, based on hate, North Carolina and Duke is great, but based on hate, Louisville and Kentucky, to me, has always been my favorite rivalry because they're literally insane and they go after each other. And, you know, the one coach coached at both places and all that kind of thing. But I got to tell you, based on games, based on endings, there's nothing like Duke and North Carolina. It's almost like the gods have said, we deemed this to be crazy every time. And I think, you know, Jay said it always delivers and all that, and he's right. Like, not only does it always deliver, it always delivers in spectacular fashion. And let's be honest, Trey Jones was great until he shot an air ball. And then, you know what? There he was, Wendell Moore picking it up and laying it in. And, you know, Seth, do you agree with this? Bad teams find a way to lose. Could that apply to Carolina in this game?
Yeah, I do. I think at the end of the game, I mean, you find a way to lose. You step up to the line. All you got to do is make a couple free throws. Game's over. Boom. History. And you got guys stepping up and barely hitting a rim. You got to find a way to just slow down the ball a little bit so that Duke can't just come flying down. And I think in the back of their minds, sure. I mean, like, you and I have had teams that have been like that. It hasn't happened a lot of Carolina, but there has to be self-doubt. You know, that energy, that enthusiasm they played with, well, they got up 13 or so. Instead of just finishing it off like a good team, a team that expects to win does, there was some self-doubt. And there were some plays that you kind of head-scratching plays. And, you know, just not, you know, like, look, at the end of the game, run the ball in your hands, be strong with the basketball, you know, limit them to one shot, contain the ball in transition so that you can force an extra pass and stay in front. And then when you get fouled, step up to the line and knock it down. I mean, like, just, you know, have some jewels and step up the line and knock it down. And, look, Duke made plays. You got to give them credit. They did it without Vernon Carey. I mean, Vernon Carey goes out. I said three things you got to do to beat Duke. You got to play ahead of the defense and score in transition and get some easy baskets. You got to be strong with the basketball, not commit live ball turnovers. And you've got to make Vernon Carey defend and get him out of the game. Now, they got him out of the game on charges. They did those things, but they didn't do enough things to finish off the game. Great atmosphere, great energy. Cole Anthony was good, not great. Trey Jones was terrific down the stretch and made plays. Now, let's forward ahead to the Florida State game. What did you see last night from Duke that you said, boy, I'll tell you one thing, they validated that win, or two, I'm still concerned, I'm not totally in on Duke?
No, I think I'm in on Duke. I think they validated that win big time. I think that their defense was terrific. I put this out on Twitter, and I believe it. I thought their transition defense is the best that I've seen. They get back, and they make you shoot over at the worst. They influence you by being in the right position to take a charge. When you're going to make a list, and we'll all do this at some point, probably sooner than later, but if you're going to make a list of teams that can win a national championship, I've got Duke up there with anybody. I really do. Got to go into Vernon Carey more. You said that last night on television. I totally agree. Vernon Carey can never be forgotten in this offense. Cassius is playing, wow.
Really well. You know,
yeah, he's good. He's playing lights out. They're getting decent production from others. I'm all in on this Duke. I love their defense. Seth, it's kind of like this. Beginning of the year when we would talk, or I remember doing a Duke two games in the Garden, you know, loved their old school keep it on the side defense. Maybe that went away for a while, but I like it now. I do. I liked it last night. And I like Florida State. Let's be honest. You talk about the world being make or miss. Tie game, Florida State had some wide open threes from the corner each side, and one the air ball, the other they missed badly. So, you know, I'm not down on Florida State. I just think Duke validated everything that happened in Chapel Hill. You?
I thought Duke was good. Here's my thing. I mean, Florida State's hard to play against because they do turn you over, and they sped them up a little bit. And everyone said, well, it's a back-to-back game. You know, Duke was going to be tired. It's no different than an NCAA tournament game. You play Thursday, you play Saturday. You know, and that's no different than what happened with, you know, you played in Chapel Hill 8 miles away, and you come home and you play a home game. That's easier than playing, almost as easy as playing an NCAA tournament weekend. But here are my concerns with Duke. And maybe they're not real. I think that, number one, Trey Jones shot the ball 15 or 16 times. Vernon Carey shot it 5 times. They got to figure out a way when people get up and underneath them, they got to figure out a way to run offense and get the ball where they want it, not stick it in Trey Jones' hand coming off a high ball screen. Because I don't think, and you saw at the end of the game, I'm not sure, and he did it against Carolina, he's a great finisher at the rim or a great decision maker coming off of that stuff. So that's a little bit of a concern. I love their defense. Their defense is terrific because it starts with Trey Jones on the ball, and then they were athletic enough with Moore and Stanley to get in passing lanes, and their defensive transition was great. Turning it over, I mean, you know, they got sped up and turned it over 21 times. They gave up 17 offensive rebounds. And forget Florida State. I think Florida State upside is as good as any team in the country. I really do believe that. I think because every night there's a different guy that can beat you. Like last night, Trent Forrest was great. It could be Patrick Williams. It could be Devin Vassell. You know, it could be Osborne. It could be any number of guys. You know, it could be Walker that can beat you on any given night. I just don't know in a possession game in the NCAA tournament, and Duke has to grind out and get a basket. Who do you give the ball to and how do you get him the ball? The same problem that I said last year with the Zion Williamson team, like they never figured out a way, all right, this is how we're going to get Zion the ball. This is where he wants to get the ball. So to me, if they can't overwhelm you, and I call it bully ball, like that's what Duke is. When Duke is at their very best, they've overwhelmed people with their defense. And then they basically got to transition and made plays. Do you think they're good enough if it gets it to a grinded out game to win a game against like type opponent?
Yeah, I do. Look, here's what I believe in. I believe in Alex O'Connell and Joey Baker are going to influence the games in the tournament because they can make shots, you know. And I think they'll have influence. I do, Seth. I think there's a toughness there with this group. I think Duke has instilled. Now, again, they're not going to win national championship every year, but it's a little bit like Tom Izzo. I mean, you're going to bet against Michigan State even though they're out of the polls? Yeah, I'm sure you are, but don't be surprised when they make a run. Actually, you can put – a lot of ways you can put Syracuse in there, not maybe this year, but over the years. But, yeah, I'm not betting against Duke. I think Duke, as you said, they're flawed. You know, we talk about every team being flawed. But, yes, I can see them making a run as deep as, you know, winning a national championship. I could also see them losing because of the things – that sure. You just said. But, man, I feel like this team pretty much for the entire year has had the toughness culture of Duke basketball, and that's the thing that has served them best over the years, I feel. That and, you know, as of late, abundance of talent, I get all that. But this team seems to have a toughness about them that's terrific.
I think they are a little old school Duke. I agree with that. And I think they, you know, because they don't have just overwhelm you with talent, they've gotten back to their roots of – And their core beliefs of being just a tougher defensive team. Now, having said that, and you say, you know, you can see that. Now, there was a team in Gonzaga that absolutely went into Moraga and destroyed St. Mary's. Now, think about this. They had three front court guys, Tilly, Petrusev, and Timmy. They went for 60. 60. All right? That's great. And then Corey Kispert, I mean, he only had 10, but that you need him. He's going to show up and make a big shot. Didn't even have to score, but he defends and rebounds. And Woolridge is a good defender. They get Gilder off the bench, who's starting to get a better feel for it. Is there a team, and I understand the conference they're playing in, but they still have to win against Washington and Arizona and Oregon and people like that in North Carolina. I mean, is there a team that's more talented than Gonzaga?
No, I don't. I'm starting to believe there's not. Both ends of the court. Watching Baylor last night, tough as hell defensively. Maybe it's just a bad night offensively, but I don't think there is, Seth. The versatility of the bigs, the ability to – how do I put this? They're like Duke in that they just have a confidence about them that when you step on the court with that uniform on, you're just better than maybe you should be. You know, I don't know. Maybe that's wrong, but that's the way it seems like to me. So I think they're terrific. I think, you know, you just put it out on Twitter, San Diego State is –
ooh.
Elite defensively, long. I mean, they guard you. They play in the post. I mean, so I think if you're going to ask me based on this season, based on what I've seen, the teams you're talking about, Duke is one of them. I think Louisville's one of them. Yes. San Diego State's one of them. I think Gonzaga's one of them. Probably Kansas. You know, I mean, there's certain teams that even though everybody tells me there's no great teams, They're pretty damn good. And let me throw something else out to you, Seth, if you don't mind.
You can throw anything out to me.
I hear all this stuff about no elite players and college basketball. Do you know Anthony Bennett was the first pick in the NBA draft? Do you know Michael Olcandy was the first pick in the NBA draft? Olcandy was like 20 years ago, but Anthony Bennett, I think is Anthony Bennett, pretty recently. Markel Fultz. We've had a lot of years where there hasn't been a marquee guy. We've had a lot of years of people saying, well, let me back up. We've had a lot of years of no marquee guy, but the whining this year about college basketball, the incessant whining, is misguided. I think these teams are really good. Like, I'm watching – I did two straight Louisville games last night. I'm thinking to myself, I don't care what era. These guys play with anybody, anytime, anywhere, at least at home. I mean, I haven't done a Louisville road game, but at least at home, you're not – you know, they haven't played great in one of the halves, but – and you're not beating them – in 1992 or 2002 or whenever the hell basketball was supposedly great. So I don't necessarily, the more you look at this season, I don't think this is any different than any other season, Seth. We haven't promoted Green Room guys, and we haven't promoted Trey Young, and we haven't promoted, you know, Zion Williamson, but, you know.
Well, I'll tell you one thing. You know, our favorite line on the World's Greatest Podcast is college basketball what?
Always delivers every night.
Always delivers every single night. And you
every
know
night.
What? Every night we're getting incredible games. Think about incredible games. How about Auburn LSU this weekend? Mm. And like the Fighting Bruce Pearls are never out of it. And like, I think it's part of how he coaches. Like, he's empowering, challenging. He coaches with the chip. They play with the chip. They just keep on coming at you. You know, sometimes they're getting downhill and they're getting to the line. The other night they shot 44 threes. They have a sense of urgency and unbelievable confidence that they're just going to find a way to get back in the game. I saw it in the Kentucky game. We saw it in the LSU game. We saw it in the Arkansas game. What makes a team and what makes a guy have that trait? What do you think?
That's a great question, because Bruce is a lot of things. I mean, Bruce isn't, you know, if you're going to, Tom Landry of college basketball might be Coach K, right? I mean, Jerry mm-hmm. Glanville of college basketball might be Bruce. I don't know. I mean, I don't know. I mean, I know this. He's got good players. I know this. I was just talking to a former Indiana player, Todd Leary, about Coach Knight before I got on here with you guys, and he was saying, you know, one of the things about Coach Knight, he just kind of made you believe you could do things that you didn't even know you could do. And I would put that with Bruce. He just makes you, all right, it's your turn now. Let's go. What the hell are we doing? And he drives you. I don't think he's afraid to coach guys. I think so many guys are afraid to coach players now, get after him. And I also think the relationship that he has, and I think his son being there helps all that. The dude has won wherever he's been. Like, everywhere he's been. He's like the all-time leading winner at every school he's ever been. So whatever he's doing right. And don't, you know, he loses two guards, and these two guards look the same as last year's guards. They just make plays when they need to make plays. And Okoro comes in, and he's terrific. I just think Bruce has a knack for getting guys to play really hard, getting guys to play his way, and understanding, like Bill Belichick does, every game was organic. Every game, you come in with a plan, but that plan has to change based on that game, regardless of what happened yesterday, regardless of what happened in the first minute of the game. You got to change with it. I think he's terrific at that aspect, Seth. I really do. I think he's great at that.
Yeah, I think he is also. I think, and I'll tell you another guy who's really good at that. I watched Texas Tech last night, and Chris Beard. I'll tell you what he does. The other team's best scorer is not beating him. Like, you play Texas Tech and you're the leading scorer, you're not beating him. Because he's not allowing you to beat him. And, like, you know, that was one of my things. Don't let the other team's best player beat you. If someone's going to beat you, let someone else beat you. Like, he holds Desmond Bane to 7 points last night. I mean, and they are getting better offensively. They shot it great last night. But there's something to be said for teams that run not motion but real motion. The unpredictability of motion. And they've got playmakers at the forward spots, you know, Chris Clark especially, that makes it even that much more effective. But I'm looking at this team, and they've played a tough schedule. I'm looking at this team, and I said it last night. Texas Tech's going to probably be a 7 or 8 seed. Mm. Let me tell you, you don't want to see them in your bracket, because they check you every possession. They don't let your best player beat you. And then offensively, they got enough different guys, whether it's Edwards, whether it's Moretti, whether it's Clark, whether it's Jamias Ramsey. I mean, they have enough guys and enough ways within their motion to score, and they've got a little bit of what Auburn has. They got it. Those dudes are so invested in it all and in each other. And he's such a good messenger to his team of, hey, we're going to continue to get better. This is part of it. This is part of the journey. We're going to, you know, hey, we got to do the right things every day. We got to do them longer every day. We got to do them better every day. Like, he coaches his teams really hard, but his messaging with his teams, and he's interesting. And he did something that you said Coach Knight did. He teaches with film. He doesn't teach by stop and practice every 2 seconds, but he's a really, really good teacher. Texas Tech, man. If you see him in your bracket, one you should worry. If you see him in your bracket and you're picking brackets, you might want to advance those bad boys.
Yeah, you might want to far. And, you know, if you find them, you're the coach of the team playing them, you might want to call and say, can we change here? Can we? Because they're getting better. Seth, they're getting better and better, man. That effort last night was, you know, sometimes, you know, teams put together games like that, but that was above and beyond, man. That, again, we're going to, you know, Lenardi's getting involved and things like that are going to happen here. And so we're going to, you know, get into bracketology, but I'm telling you what you said right there. Talk about a team getting better. Talk about a team that believes it's really good. That's one right there in Texas Tech. I'll tell you one. Can I get into another team?
Yeah.
Can I talk Big Ten for a minute?
Yeah.
Michigan State drops out of the top 25 after being number one. First time since 14. Kentucky, team did it. What you tell me, what's going on with Sparty? I've got him here against Illinois.
I think they got some things going on. I think Tom's standing up for his guys the other day. They're just, you know what? They don't know what they're going to get out of Gabe Brown and Aaron Henry every night. I think that's an issue offensively because it puts so much pressure on Cassius, especially in all that ball screen, throw it back, second ball screen. People are committing two guys to him. I think that they've got some stuff going on with Xavier Tillman. His fiance is expecting. I think, you know, that puts a lot of pressure on him. When's she going to have the baby? When's she not? I think he can be distracted to some extent, which is, you know, let's face it, it's human nature, and he needs to be there for her. I think that, look, are they Final Four good? I don't know. Are they not Final Four good? I don't know about that either.
Right.
Because let's face it, they can get on a run. You know, they've got to try to figure out a way to plug back in. The problem is in the Big Ten. All right. They lose three in a row. They go to Illinois and then they got Maryland for College Game Day. I mean, like, and you know, their schedule coming down the stretch, there's nothing easy about that league, and that league can overwhelm you. I remember the great Skip Prosser used to tell me when the first year I was coaching the ACC and sitting at league meetings and I'm having lunch with him after the league meetings. And he goes, I said, Skip, can you give me one big bit of advice? He said, here's the deal is it's never as good as you think it is. He said, we were number one in the country last year. He said, I thought things were pretty good. And then all of a sudden we lost six in a row. He said, because you know what? It's just the way the schedule played out. It's who you play, when you play, where you play them. I think Michigan State will be fine. What does fine mean? Second weekend at least. I think Michigan State, Cassius Winston, when he's good, he's ridiculous. He's got to get a supporting cast. And then they've got to find again that joy that they were having playing. I think they, you know, this season has been exhausting for this team. And they have a daily reminder every single day. But I do think that they will figure out a way to get a joy back in their team.
Yeah, I do too. I mean, if you bet against Izzo and Cassius Winston in a one-game event like the NCAA tournament, you're nuts. I mean, they lost to Middle Tennessee. That's one time. I mean, you're crazy. And I thought Michigan did a really good job against Michigan State. I thought Michigan, sometimes, as you know, man, you go into somebody else's arena – It ain't easy. Everybody thinks, oh, Michigan State's beat them a number of times. They'll go in there and beat Michigan. Michigan's reeling a little bit. No. I mean, you relock, you reload, and away you go. It's just the way it is. And so if we're going to talk NCAA tournament, I would say I wouldn't bet against them. They're not going to win the Big Ten, I don't think. Maybe they can get on a roll. It starts with Illinois and then moves to Maryland, as you said, and that's not easy. They could lose both, and now you're really reeling. But I don't bet against Izzo and I don't bet against Cassius Winston. But I do think this. I do think Kenny Goins, the more I watch Michigan State, the more I think, man, do they miss Kenny Goins? Cause he got Tillman connected with him last year defensively. And then he could make it when he shot it from the top of the key off a pick and pop action, he wasn't going to miss. And there just is nobody like that. And to your point about both Henry, Rocket Watts and Gabe Brown, they make. Occasionally, are they shot makers? I don't know. And that's, you know, that's a little bit where Kenny Goins and McQuaid last year came in and not having Langford. We've talked about it. Hell, you know, not having Langford this year hurts far worse than not having Langford last year.
Yeah, and like sometimes I wonder, I look at Aaron Henry and he puts up some decent numbers. Like sometimes he just doesn't catch it ready to shoot it. Like where he does, he believes like, hey, this is my role. I got to be ready. I'm coming off that wide pin down. Boom. I got to come off that thing, show my hands, get behind the ball. Bam. Knock that thing down. To me, the season has an ebb and flow. I mean, that's just the way it is. When you're playing in the Big Ten right now, the season's going to have an ebb and flow. And, you know, I say, you know, you're only as good as your locker room. When you're playing in a conference like that, when you're playing in the Big East, when you're playing in February and you're trying to play your way into the tournament, you're only as good as your locker room. And I'm betting on Michigan State's locker room. Yeah. I'm betting on their tradition and I'm betting on all those things. But now you get into the Big Ten. I think Maryland and what Nick Smith's doing, we don't talk about this dude enough. Like he's shooting 41 from the three. Like it's ridiculous how they're playing right now. They always defend and they've got length and they got versatility in their defense. They're starting to get out in transition better. They're getting easy baskets. Cowan is a member of my Mariano Rivera team, as a finisher. He makes good decisions. Maryland, I'll tell you what, Maryland is getting good and having a chance to be great.
I agree. And I like what Mark Turgeon did. He sat Wiggins. Now Wiggins still plays as much. He brought in Ayala. Gives us, smaller team, but like a lot of teams are doing, you're playing 2 point guards. To your point on Stick Smith. A couple weeks ago in Bloomington, Stick Smith dominated. Maybe we talked about it on Wade's podcast, but he dominated the entire state of Indiana, particularly in the second half against Indiana. And what was interesting for me, I've always thought Stick Smith to be a bit of a passive, really nice kid, just a kid that goes about his business and works. But he showed a fire that I think great players have to have. And I don't believe that you're born. I think you are born with it, but I also think you can develop it. And I think he's developed it. He showed a fire. He went after Indiana fans after the game. I mean, he was hot. And I personally, I was embarrassed for Indiana fans, but I thought that Smith really showed a growth. And isn't that what you're supposed to do as a college basketball player? I always say if you exit the same way you entered, then everybody's failed you, including yourself. And I just think he has elevated his game to a level that everybody now has to follow. It was, and I've done 50 games of theirs. It feels like to me that this is a team once the Mitchell twins left, once they made the adjustment of IL, once Dick Smith decided to come outside his own body. This is a team that to me, has taken off in terms of their toughness, in terms of their confidence, in terms of being together. And Maryland fans, get off Mark Turgeon's ass. You guys are always on Mark Turgeon's ass. Every time I turn around, they're on Mark Turgeon's ass. Just stop it. I mean, look, Wooden's not coming back. Lefty's not coming back. Gary Williams not coming back. You got a coach in there that's recruiting hard, working hard. Shut the hell up and let the guy do his job and support him. My God.
I agree. I mean, they're a top 10 program. I mean, like, here's the deal. It's hard to win national championships. It's hard to get to the Final Four. They're a top 10 program. And you know what? There's no issues. And, you know, they lose the Mitchell twins and they got better. He coaches them every day. You know, whether you like it, they need to play faster, they need to play slower. Like, here's the deal. They win games. They win a lot of games. And it seems like those guys really play for him, which is really important.
Yeah.
And like, I thought he made a great decision. Like, you know, Stick Smith, like, all of a sudden he's saying, all right, you run the floor, you defend, you block shots, and you want to shoot those threes? Light it up, babe. Light it up. And they've changed some things offensively to get him stepping into trail threes, coming off drags and throwing it back and doing different things. And to me, that's coaching. Now I'll tell you what else is coaching. Seton Hall. When we talk about the best teams in the country, Seton Hall, and that Seton Hall Villanova game, another great game. Seton Hall is as good as anyone, and it's much more to Miles Powell. And I love Miles Powell, and he's healthier. He's back in shape. Quincy McKnight guards the ball. They block out the sun. Their front court is ridiculous. The wing guys, Kale and Roden, those guys get to the rim. They can change defenses. They got a city feel to them and a toughness, but they're hard to prepare for. Seton Hall is really, really, really good. And Kevin Willard is not afraid to coach that team. They play really hard. They check you. They play with confidence offensively. Seton Hall is the real deal, man.
Seton Hall has what you need. Let me ask you this question, because I think they do. They shoot it enough?
Yeah, I think. Well, the one guy stretches just to the point. Quincy McKnight's shooting it pretty well. Roden's shooting the ball acceptably. They're hard to get a basket on because that Gill and the bigs. I mean, like, and then they got Mamu Kelishvili. I love just saying his name. Fonz taught me how to say his name, so I can say it now. Sandro Mamu Kelishvili. He had 18 against Villanova. I mean, he helps him as a 6'9", 6'10 guy that can shoot it. And then, you know, kind of put him in ball screen, spread the court out a little bit, give a little bit more room for those slashers to make plays. I mean, they survived concussions. They survived Mamu Kelishvili's injury. They survived Quincy McKnight's potential injury scare. And they developed the bench, and they developed the depth, and they developed the confidence. Seton Hall is really, really good. I mean, really good. So who are you more confident in outside of Seton Hall? Marquette? Nova? Creighton? Or someone else?
Yeah, I thought you were going to throw Butler in there, but I just watched.
Well, I was going to, but that was someone else. And I just because Butler lost the other day doesn't mean I'm, you know.
No, but they haven't played great. I mean, they you know, they get bailed out against Villanova by the greatest closer in America, Kamar Baldwin. I'm buying Seton Hall, Seth, and if you're going to ask me who also will I buy, I tell you this. The Marquette, I was going to say Warriors. They're not the Warriors anymore for a long time, but they were to me when I was growing up. Marquette Golden Eagles. I watched them come back a few weeks ago late night against Xavier, at Xavier, and I, without Marcus Howard. And I saw real toughness. And I was watching them the other night, actually Sunday, and I watched them play, a Butler team that's, you know, people had them as a top 16 seed, top four seed in the country, and they whipped Butler. I mean, Butler, and I'm being literal here, did not have a chance in the game. They kept guys in front. They banged on the glass. Different guys were making shots. It was, I think Howard, only had 16 points. It wasn't like he had to go stupid. It's a most improved team. And I say this every once in a while that I've seen in college basketball during the year this year. I saw them in Orlando and I did not like their team. I did not like a lot of things about their team. I see them now and I like a lot of things and I like their toughness, Seth. You know, they lose the Housers. You think everything's going to fall apart. It doesn't. They're getting better. Look, Seton Hall to me is a team you never bet against, you know, Jay Wright. I get all that. You shouldn't. No, absolutely not. But I'll tell you what, if you want to look around and say, wait a second, who can make some noise here? Who's a sleeper team that maybe nobody's talking about than they should be? I'll go with Marquette. How about you?
Yeah, I like Marquette. I worry at times, and they didn't do it this weekend. They get so, Marcus Howard becomes such a dominant
factor.
No
question.
And like, you know, what happens on the biggest stage in the NCAA tournament? Does he try to do too much? Does he have enough trust? Where I like him is because they've improved immeasurably. They used to not check anyone defensively.
No.
And they're good defensively right now. I always thought they were a little soft defensively, and I think they're much more competitive, much more physical right now. McEwen, mm-hmm. It gives him another scorer.
He was big time, Seth. I mean, he was big time down the stretch against Xavier, and he hit a couple again the other night. I mean, he's pretty good.
Yeah, he is good. And I think the more that Marcus Howard understands that, I think, you know, the better off they are.
Hey, this is Dan Dockage, and we got to talk about my friends at 5-Hour Energy. Anyone who travels frequently knows how tiring it can be. Whether you're on business or on a vacation, a 5-Hour Energy shot can help you stay alert and energized wherever you may be headed. 5-Hour Energy helps you get through your crazy on-the-go life. Zero sugar, 4 calories, and a convenient portable size. It's the perfect pick-me-up for busy, hard-working people. Now it comes in 2 great extra-strength topical tastes, strawberry banana, tropical burst. They're delicious, and you've got to give them a try. Try them both. Go online to shop the number 5hourenergy.com. Use the code courtside to receive a one-time offer of 10% off your order. Go to shop 5hourenergy.com and use the code courtside to receive a one-time offer of 10% off. 5-Hour Energy, energy on the go.
All right, so now, hey, we talked about a bunch of teams. One last thing I want to talk about, then we got to talk about Coach Knight because I really do want to get your take because you have a unique perspective and you've talked to all your guys. I know you had a great UVA blob on the show the other day, and I know there's been a lot of conversation. Real quickly on Baylor before we get to that. Baylor, love them, love their rebounding, love their defense, love 3 guards, love that they keep you in front, they guard you, all that stuff. Their inability to execute offensively, does it worry you at all? Because, I mean, like, you forget about non-conference, and they got good wins. But, like, in league, and that's a great league defense, as bad as the Big 12 is defensively in football, it's that good defensively in basketball. All right, so it's a great league defensively and really well coached on the defensive end. Do you have any concerns about their struggles offensively?
Concerns, yes, but I think there's always, again, last night or against Texas, you're on the road, you're not playing good, but they win. And now it's at, what is it, 21 wins in a row. Look, if I'm having concerns, then it's just because I'm trying to make up stuff. You win 21 in a row in that league, you win basically every game. You know, they started out 1-1, I guess it was, and now, you know, they're 22-1, I think. So, yeah, but I'm just going to make stuff up, Seth. They've won a variety of ways. They've scored in the 80s and 90s. They've scored in the 50s and won. They've scored in the 60s and won. So, sure, if you have a game like they had last night, but everybody has games like they had last night. So, they're the best team in the country to me. They've played the best of everybody in the country against a higher schedule. Maybe you could say Gonzaga has played better, but I don't think they've played the same people. So, yeah, sure, but that's just me and you being, you know, coach slash blogger guy. When you win like that, I don't know, hard to make up problems.
That's good.
I guess.
All right. I mean, I hear you. I mean, just in league. All right. So here's the deal. I'm going to tell you my reaction. I'm watching, obviously, Coach Knight and Quinn and those guys come out on the court. And, you know, as a coach, seeing a coach with his players in that moment, creating what I thought was the first time probably since he left one Indiana, and seeing, to me, it seemed like a genuine joy in the players' faces, whether it was relief, I don't know what it was, seeing Coach Knight be moved, to where he was moved. I'm not gonna lie to you. I was all choked up. Now, I played for a guy that was his former assistant at Army in Alabama, and he coached me really, really hard. To me, it was more about seeing a coach reunited with his guys, and this is me. This is, you know, again, sure, I'm not on the inside of Indiana basketball. Sure. A coach being reunited with his guys and closure. And I think it was the best thing that ever could happen to Indiana basketball in general, because now those guys can go back without, you know, feeling guilty. But more importantly, that moment in time and that snapshot in my mind really moved me.
Yeah, a lot of people felt that. I didn't feel that way. I watched it in Louisville, and I watched a little bit of it, and I felt sad from this standpoint. It's one thing for people to tell you, like Dr. Rink, Coach Knight's doctor, is my doctor, and I was just with him last week. He's a friend. And he's like, yeah, you know, coach gets around fine, blah, 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 and, you know. But it's another thing to see him. And I felt sad seeing him that way. And I wonder about two things, Seth. You know, the player thing is great. Randy Whitman and Quinn Buckner did a fantastic thing extending a 1980 40-year celebration into an all-player celebration, and that was awesome. But the thing that I got sad about was seeing him and wondering what's going on inside of his mind. Does he know and can't express? And it always is my thought with dementia and with ALS, and I've gotten to know a few ALS patients, but I did see the joy, and I did see the excitement come back to him. And I thought that was really cool. Like, I thought that was very, very, very cool. Indiana basketball players have been comfortable, Seth, coming back. You know, first couple of years, Coach Knight and his kids would call, you know, players and say, why are you going back there and all that kind of stuff. But that's dissipated. It was great to see players back. It was great to see him. I saw Seth, a real energy to him as the thing went on, and he kind of, and I'm not going to be a psychologist here, he's kind of grasping where he's at. And then the thing with Dick Vitale, one of two things. I don't understand Alzheimer's. I don't understand dementia well enough to know whether that was a result of Alzheimer's or dementia, whatever it is, or if that, because a lot of people have hit me with emails saying, you know, my father had dementia, and that was a reaction based on somebody touching you and that kind of stuff. Or because I saw, maybe, and I know him, I think, better than anybody, at least that was around him at Indiana. I saw life come to his eyes when Vitale tried to grab him and he pulled away and got confrontational because the man loved confrontation. Confrontation energized him. Now, whether he had to go back and apologize or whether he stayed stubborn, doesn't matter. And when I saw that with Dick, I'm like, and it's funny, I was talking to Uwe Blau off the air, and he's like, yeah, I saw that too, man. It was like he was alive again. You know what I mean? And so I thought it was an awesome day. I don't know. Different guys have different reactions. Like Uwe still believes he should have never been fired, and that did nothing to squelch that. A lot of guys believe that, hey, it was great for the administration because finally they've gotten rid of us publicly. Because they haven't wanted anybody back from Indiana, really, including when I was there. They didn't really want me around. Samson hired me, and it was fine. But they didn't really want me. They really wanted to move away from Coach Knight in a big way. And so a lot of guys feel like, hey, awesome day, unbelievable event, crazy great to be a part of it. But it was like we were all in a cage and they got rid of us. Now, that sounds cynical, I know, but
does that help bring them back? Did Saturday help say, wait a second, that was history, and obviously there were reasons behind everything, but he came back, those banners are real, these players have represented Indiana in a way, and you know what? We've got to understand this is a special group. And now it's time to be one Indiana again and celebrate the history, celebrate these former players, and have everyone pulling in the same direction.
It could be, but look, let's be honest, Seth. I mean, a lot of people wax philosophic on those kind of things. And a lot of people said that Archie Miller should have, you know, had his players out there at halftime to watch this. Coach Knight spoke to the team. I tell you what I would have done, and I've said this on my radio show, but this is just me being a maniac. I wouldn't let the players in the locker room at halftime the way they were playing. I said, look, you guys don't deserve to be in here. There's a lot of greatness out on that court. A lot of guys that gave, excuse my language, I was called, they gave their ass to play at Indiana. They gave their heart, their soul. A lot of times they gave their pride away to play, you know, for Coach. Now, I don't give a damn if you watch. I don't give a damn if you go to the concession stand, but you ain't coming to this locker room because those guys set a standard that you're not living up to. And I would have been fired at halftime of that game. If I were the head coach, because that's exactly what I would have done, and nobody, you know, seems to think you can do that anymore. It was awesome for the, you know what's funny, Seth? So I have friends there, and I go, hey, how was the crowd? And one guy made a comment, he said, look, he said, the crowd was fine, he said, but it's hard to cheer when you're holding a cell phone. You know what I mean? Like, it wasn't like blow the roof off. And I'm like, well, why not? And he said two reasons. One, it's hard to cheer because everybody had their cell phone up. And the other thing is it took Coach Knight quite a while to get out to the court, so it's hard to cheer for a long time. So a lot of people were expecting the roof to blow off. And then when I watched video of it, Seth, hell, everybody had a cell phone. You know what I mean? So try cheering with a cell phone in one hand. But I thought it was an unbelievable move by Randy and Quinn. I thought it was great for Patrick. But I'm not as – Indiana does not want at all a guy like Coach Knight, not the abusive part or whatever you deem as abuse. I never deemed it as abuse, but if people want to, not that part. That's not what I'm talking about. I'm talking about they do not want a coach that gets bigger than the university. They don't. That's one of the many reasons, I guess, they say they fired Tom Crean. They just don't want that. They don't want that. And I'm not saying they're hindering basketball at Indiana, but I did an interview with the voice of the Hoosiers, Don Fisher, and I'm not saying they're not hindering basketball at Indiana. I'm not, because I don't know. I'm not there. But there is a sentiment that they don't want anybody to get bigger than the program at Indiana. So, you know, it's funny. Uwe was like, Dan, it didn't do a thing. They should have never fired him. They knew who he was. If they were going to fire him, just simply say, look, he's not winning at the level that he used to win at. Don't make up some nonsense to fire him. I mean, and I always say this, look, season on the brink, I get hit in the face twice with the basketball. And it happened in Minnesota when I was a freshman. I stole it from him. He hits me in the face twice. Not one administrator did a thing about it. And I didn't care about it. I didn't care. I just knew I was going to get the play because he would feel bad. So they knew, you know, that was in Feinstein's book, the biggest selling book in the history of sports books. And all the stuff with Knight was there. So they knew who he was. So a lot of guys like, look, this is great, but they still wanted us out of here. And Uwe's like the smartest guy in the world, right? He's like Phi Beta Kappa. And while we were all watching college hoops, he was at the freaking computer center learning how to run program. You know, I mean, and I thought that was an interesting perspective, and I don't think it's necessarily off base.
Well,
weird, right? It's Kardashians. The Indiana basketball family are the Kardashians of college hoops. It's the most dysfunctional, weird thing ever. But it's ours, so to hell with everybody else.
Yeah, and you know what? It's yours, and now you got to figure out how to win some games.
Now
that Coach Knight is back, he attended the game, and he got the ovation and brought all these players back. You know, my bigger question is, what do those players think of the program?
Oh, they don't like it. They don't like it. And I'm the most vocal because I have the biggest platform, but a lot of guys are sitting there going, what the hell? Like, one of the things, and I was a bad player at Indiana, but there's a kid named Todd Leary, and I was on his radio show this morning before I came on, and I said to Leary, I said, okay, how many times do people come up to you and say, you were my favorite player? Because of hustle or whatever. And he's like, Dan, it's unbelievable. People come up and say, I remember you diving for loose ball. You know, that kind of thing. People come up to me all the time and say, hey, you were my favorite player. And I said, well, you must date ugly people because you don't have any taste. If I'm, Dan, you hustled, you blah, blah, blah. So my question was to Todd, like, who's your favorite player at Indiana? Like, who are you watching that you go, damn, that dude busts it. Like, you can, Luka Garza at Iowa is the main guy, right? He's the stud. But you can like Connor McCaffrey because of how hard he plays. You can like Wieskamp because of how hard he plays. You know, you can like Toussaint because he's a tough, quick guy that guards. And you got team. There's nobody like that in Indiana. That drives us all nuts. It does.
I'll give you what. The greatest line of the weekend. The greatest line of the weekend. We'll close it on this one. The greatest line of the weekend was Matt Harm. He said, "Hey,
right.
the guy I want to impress is Coach Katie.
Right.
He's our guy."
Right.
I thought Matt Harm's that day for a lot of things. I mean, Matt Harm's hit that big right on the money. I don't know about it. I understand the celebration all that, but hey, the guy I want to make sure that. So you know, like, here's the question: is do the Indiana players understand, have that same mentality, or is it because of what's happened, Coach Knight is so far removed that they don't understand that they're playing for like you guys and that tradition?
I asked my son that before we came on. I said, look, I came to Indiana in 81 in the fall. I wouldn't have cared about a guy coming in from 1961, Branch McCracken. I wouldn't have cared. I mean, that's great. Let's go. Andrew made the point, he goes, Dad, everybody knows who Bob Knight is. Every basketball player knows who Bob Knight is. Everybody knows because social media tells us, because we're so much more on Google. We're so much more on the internet. You had no internet. Andrew said, hey, Dad, you had encyclopedias. Like, what the hell? He goes, He goes, Dad, everybody knows. So my answer to your question is, yeah, they know, but I got to tell you, if you're judging by the second half after Knight was back, they don't give a rat's ass because they played worse, Seth, after the first half. So you can only go by what people do, and right now it's no.
College basketball.
It's the best.
Never disappoints. It's unbelievable. We're going to have great ones today. We're going to have you and RD. All right, so last thing we're going to close on. And I want your take on this. We'll finish up on this. All right, so let's be honest. We're members of the media. We coached for a lot
we're
of time.
Entertainers, Seth.
Yeah, we're entertainers. All right. We're entertainers. All right. So we're entertainers. You know what a pet peeve of mine is?
What?
When you do an interview with a media member and you kind of push back on them a little bit and ask them a tough question that they don't want to hear, why do those guys like get so in a huff and so upset and so ruffled? Yet, like, for years, I sat in, you know, post-game press conferences, and dudes would have no respect whatsoever and ask anything and everything. And, you know, you had to stand up there and answer it because that was your responsibility. But if it's flipped the other way, guys lose their minds and can't handle it. What, do you have a take on that?
Well, I have a big take on that. I mean, media guys – and I say this all the time, and I'm sorry, but this is my take. I don't want to hear from media guy that hasn't played, nor have they coached. Now, other people do, but I spent 40 years studying it, and I don't want to hear from it. So when a media guy gets attacked, they're so insecure, and they have been taught that we are the media. We are the voice. You kowtow to us. And it's interesting. And I'll add to your statement, every media guy wants coaches to be fired. You got the hot list. You got the this list. You ever see what happens when Deadspin lays off people? Do you ever see what happens when these newspapers lay off people? It's like or guys are just so bad at their job. You know, all these media guys bandy together. And, oh, this is the worst thing in the world. Oh, this is horrible. Oh, this is the worst. Oh, my God, I can't believe. Save Bruce Feldman, you know, back in the day. It's all right that they can say coaches should be fired. Let's get a hot list together because we're such D-bags that we want people to be fired. I don't want anybody to be fired. But coaches understand and are – look, there's a reason – why certain guys like you or me or whomever, Cassius Winston, play for Izzo, play for Knight, play for Alibalbo. There's a reason, there's a toughness to it that no guy with a pencil can ever understand. They may be able to do karate. They may be able to kick your ass. They may, whatever. But there's nothing they can understand. It's like they don't know, they won't know, and they can never know. And that drives them bat blank crazy.
I think we can close it up on that right there. The world's greatest podcast, A to Z. I'm out.
Thank you for listening to Courtside with Greenberg and Dockage. You can listen and subscribe to all ESPN podcasts in the Listen tab of the ESPN app, including the latest from the NBA and the Hoop Collective podcast, available in the ESPN app or Apple Podcasts.